Yeah, I'm just trying to find out how I can improve the program.
I can tell. I can read a commercial for
you. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, everybody. This may be trouble. Come in.
You want an opinion?
You heard the program?
Yes.
And?
It's too slow.
You mean?
Speed it up.
I should.
That's it. Bang, bang, bang. Goodbye.
He must be in a fast business.
I make minute rub. So long.
Minute rub. Okay, the sponsor wants speed. That's what he's going to get. Now, on your toes, everybody. We'll start the program over. Take it away, Pete.
I, Panna, Sal, present. And here he is.
Thank you, Andy.
And here she is.
Hello.
Well, you can't get it any faster than that.
During his career on radio, 18 years with 39 shows a year, Fred Allen starred in and was responsible for, at the very least, 700 weekly radio shows. Through those endless seasons, the sponsor had big money riding on Fred's popularity with the listeners, week after week after week. After all the jokes and the friendly feuds and insults were over, the competition was strictly life and death. Network radio for Fred Allen was profitable, gratifying, and in a way, soul-destroying. Early in his career, of course, it was all innocent fun to ridicule radio.
Well, who are you, either one of you?
You're in a huddle with Tripod Bike, president of the Better Radio Program Builders, Inc.
But what's that got
Alan,
to do?
Alan, your popularity is slipping.
Yeah?
I can fix this program so you'll be right up there where H.B. Kaltenbaum. Yeah. Mr. Bike can do it, Mr. Allen. I can fix your radio program the same way I fixed the picture business.
How?
Dishes.
Can't give... Oh, now, wait. You can't give dishes away over the air.
Why not? You see this old radio? It's my own invention. I'm calling it the Allen Radio Set. I'll put it here.
Well, now what happens?
Give me the finish of your program, Alan, and watch this radio.
All right. Okay, town hall tonight. We'll be back again next Wednesday. Good night.
Watch the Allen Radio. You get it? The minute your program is finished, millions of your listeners all over the country get a complete set of dishes. Why, you'll be bigger than Ma Perkins.
Not that. Not that. No, no. I'm not going to turn out to be a prologue to a crockery jackpot.
Okay, so I'm falling back on my pitcher technique.
That's me, eh, Mr. Bike?
Right, Happy.
Where do I come in?
What did I do when dishes quit bringing people into movie theaters?
What?
I put in double features.
You're the one.
Listen, double feature with B-pictures jammed their movie joints, and a double feature will make your radio program, Alan.
I should put a B-picture in there.
No, 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 you put in Happy.
Yeah.
What's Happy?
Hey, I'm a B-comedian, Alan.
Oh. They finally showed up. One admitted it, huh? You were a B-comedian, and you come on the program with me?
Right. Yeah. You're the A-comedian, Alan. You step up to the mic with a buffola,
yeah,
and Happy steps right up with a wheeze. You're a double feature.
I'm going places.
You get it, Alan?
I get it.
What do you say?
Just one word, boys.
Yeah?
No.
As the years wore on, the burden became heavier. Fred lost his patience with nitpickers from the networks and myopic sponsors. His parodies of radio formats began to curdle just a bit.
What's this note here on my desk?
It's a memo from the wristwatch king.
Fuller Pullover?
Yes. He wants to know the results of your survey on dunking.
Oh, yes. Pullover is designing a coffee-proof wristwatch for habitual dunkers. He wants a nationwide check on dunkers' habits. Take down these messy statistics, Miss Graff.
Yes, sir.
Composite conclusion, 62% of all Americans dunk.
Check.
18% are neat dunkers. They hold a spoon under their crullers to catch the seepage. 12% are sloppy dunkers. They wring their donuts out after dunking. Get these figures right off to Fuller Pullover.
Donut dunking and its menace to the wristwatch was one of Fred's favorite gags. In the late 1940s, the giveaway shows grabbed a big share of the listeners. What began as the innocent $64 question mushroomed into a nationwide mania for winning prizes in literally hundreds of radio raffles, local and network. It was the beginning of greed time. Fred's listeners only enjoyed themselves. The giveaways of money and merchandise began to cut into his audience. and his patience. Continuing the theme of donut dunking, he did a brilliant parody of the Pot of Gold show.
Yes, folks, tonight, $1,000 will be given away by the makers of
Digby's non-dunkable
donuts.
Yes, Digby's non-dunkable donuts. The donuts laboratory tested and especially designed to eliminate dunking.
By a special patented process, a thin waterproof layer of Digby's edible rubber covers all
Digby's
non-dunkable
donuts.
A Digby donut cannot absorb coffee. Plunge it into your cup, it bounces. Immerse it slyly, it floats.
Remember, folks, the Digby slogan, no pop, no sop, no slop. The next time you buy
Digby. Non-dunkable.
You know.
And now we present our tub of silver master of ceremonies, the genial band leader, Norris Depp.
Thank you, Sam, and good evening all. Well, folksies, I know you're all waiting to hear how the $1,000 prize was spent by last week's lucky winner, Mr. Olaf Drabb of Stilton, Oregon. Well, it seems that after getting the good news last week, Mr. Drabb had a sudden heart attack. But with that $1,000, he's sitting back in an oxygen tent, living on the fat of the land.
The Pot of Gold show with band leader Horace Height, whose music was always interrupted, reached people by phone to offer them prizes.
Well, I'll spin her again. Here she goes. And she's up. She's down. She's stopping. No, she's starting again. No, she's stopping. And the lucky number is 266. Take it, Sam.
Right, Norris. Tonight's winner is in phone book 266. Take it, Norris.
Okay, Sam. And now, folks, is how about a little music? Let's go, boys. That's all. That's all, brother. Now let's find that lucky page in phone book 266. Take it, Sam.
Right, Norris. And now let's find that lucky page in phone book 266. Take it, Norris.
Okay, Sam. And now let's find that lucky page in... Oh, say, where? What is this? We're not getting anywhere. Well, I'll spin the giant selector again.
Yeah, let her go, Norris.
Whee! And she whirls around. She's up. She's down. She's stopping. She's starting again. No, she's stopping again.
Norris.
She's starting again. She's up.
Norris.
She's down. Up, down.
Norris.
She's sideways.
Hey, Norris, for crying out loud, the thing stopped long ago.
Oh. Sorry, folks. I was looking at a dame in the front row. Take it, Sam.
Right, Norris. And the winner is the 35th name down on page 172 of phone book 266. Norris is putting through the call now.
Hello.
And in just a minute, we'll hear the lucky winner's voice as he gets the $1,000 cup of silver prize. Here's Norris with the winner now.
Hello.
Come on, Norris. Get step on.
Well, I'm doing all I can. I'm calling the thing. I can if they don't have...
Any minute now, Norris will be along with the lucky winner.
Colonel Jason Oglethorpe, at your service, sir.
Well, congratulations, Colonel. This is the tub of silver calling. We want to give you
$1,000. $1,000, sir?
Yes, Colonel. Real United States currency.
You mean northern money?
Yes, sir.
I never touch the stuff, sir.
You what?
I'm from the old Sioux, sir. I ain't even looked north for 50 years. Good day, sir.
Operator. Colonel Oglethorpe won't take the dough, Sam.
Well, he must be nuts. And speaking of dough and nuts, folks, don't forget, Digby's non-dunkable donuts have won the coveted Digby seal of approval. Digby's come in 5 luscious flavors. Soggy, pretty soggy, extra soggy, too soggy, and wow, get a stomach pump. And now we go merrily back to Norris Depp.
Well, what are we going to do, Sam?
Well, we've got to do something, Norris. Imagine not being able to get rid of $1,000.
This never happens on the Pot of Gold program. This is a fiduciary dilemma.
What's going on here?
Oh, here comes the sponsor, Mr. Digby.
Here, Depp. What's the idea of mentioning that certain program on my program?
Well, I only said Pot of Gold.
Don't say that. The Pot of Gold is my biggest rival. It's an out-and-out imitation of my program. If they hadn't originated it, I'd sue.
What are we going to do with this $1,000, Mr. Digby? I can't give it away.
Well, you've got to. If you don't give that $1,000 away in 5 minutes, Depp, you're fired. I knew I should have renewed Orson Welles.
As a gag and to stop the loss in listeners, Fred contrived to insure anyone who failed to answer a prize-winning phone call while listening to him. It was a funny idea, but short-lived.
After 8 weeks of insuring our listeners, we haven't had one legitimate claim. Well, we've had hundreds of letters. One man named Frank Gould lost his pocketbook in Europe last summer and wanted us to send him the money he lost. A shop owner out in California lost two rug customers while he was listening to the program. He wanted the $22 profit he would have made on the sale. And we had a letter from a woman in Sioux City. She said, why do giveaway programs bother with radio shows? Why don't they just mail the money out to people and save all that trouble? Well, enough about the giveaway, Imglick Portland. What's a word which I will translate later in the program. What is new?
One of Fred's really great parodies, and he did some fantastic radio parodies, was broadcast in the late 1940s. His guest was Tallulah Bankhead. The subject was the 6 a.m. wake-up nonsense. Here it is, complete.
Good morning, Freddy, darling.
Good morning, Tallulah Angel.
Sweetheart, I must say you look refreshingly well-rested this morning.
Yes, thanks to our wonderful Pasternak factory-tested Pussy Willow mattress. The mattress that takes all of the guesswork out of sleeping. So soft. Only the hearts of the tender pussy willows are used. Well, breakfast ready, Angel Face?
Yes, sweetums. Here's your coffee.
Well, thank you, doll.
Oh, peach fuzz. You've spilled some on your vest.
Good. Now I can try some of that little panther spot remover. No harsh rubbing. Just spray some little panther on your vest and watch it eat the spot right out.
And imagine, darling...
Stop! Don't you dare move to Lou.
But, darling...
What have you done to your hair? That sheen, that brilliance.
Well, I guess it's what so many society women are doing these days. I went to Madame Yvonne's Hair to Heaven. It's on Madison Avenue. You go to the back of the orange juice stand. Rap three times and ask for Antoine.
Well, it is divine. Your head looks like the back of a bunny, really.
Well, you know, darling, that Madame Yvonne uses a sensational hairdressing.
Really?
It contains that new mystery ingredient, chicken fat.
Oh, our canary.
Little Yasha is so happy, so carefree, and why shouldn't he be happy?
Yes, he knows that the newspaper on the bottom of his cage is New York's leading daily.
Good morning, Mums and Daddy.
Oh. I just love the way your tooth is shining this morning.
Yes, Mummy. I brushed it with Dr. Pratt's homogenized toothpaste.
So sweet.
I love you, Mummy and Dad.
I love you, too, darling. Now, you run along with you, baby. Well, that's Ilyasha telling us our time is up.
We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6, folks. Until then, this is Freddie.
And Tallulah.
Saying goodbye. Now, wasn't that simple, Tallulah, with a radio program like this?
But it's ridiculous, Fred. Nobody can possibly be that cheerful every morning.
Well, that's true. If one of those happy couples woke up grouchy one morning, the listener would probably hear something like this.
Hey, knucklehead, get out of that bed. You got a program to do.
Will you quit yapping? 6 o'clock in the morning. Who's up to listen to us? A couple of burglars and Arthur Godfrey, maybe. Mouth tastes like a sand hog just pulled his foot out of it. Dad, I'm sleepy.
Well, why don't you stay home some night and try sleeping?
Sleeping on that Pasternak Pussy Willow mattress? Pussy Willow. It's stuffed with cat hair. Every time I lie down on that cat hair, my back arches.
Oh, stop beefing. Here's your coffee.
Well, it's about time. I spilled some on my nightshirt.
Oh, you're such a slob. I'll get that bottle. That little bottle of panther spot remover.
You're not putting any of that atom juice on me. The last time it ate away my nightshirt and I still had the spot left. Where do you find these sponsors? In the police lineup? Your hair. It looks as though you just took your head out of a mixmaster.
I know that hag, Madame Yvonne, with her chicken fat. My hair keeps sliding off my head.
That bird again. Shut up, you molting pest.
Now, look here, Clam.
Oh, shut up. And, Yasha, you shut up, too.
Good morning, Mommy and Daddy.
That'll teach you sneaking up on your parents with that one tooth like an old elk.
Can the kid help it if she looks like you?
I want my breakfast.
Go gum a donut.
I found some.
Gotham. I've had enough of this grind with you and that kid in the canary yapping around. I've got a gun here.
You rat, you killed yourself.
Yes, and you're next.
Ah! Daddy, you killed Mummy.
Now it's your turn.
At some point in the late 1940s, every radio performer had to consider the new medium, television. It wasn't just a question of putting a camera between the studio audience and the comedian. It was a whole new dimension of entertainment. They had to recreate all those zany characters and personalities in a visual dimension. The funny sketches had to have settings and props, and the actors had to dress up or down. Also, that's where the sponsor's money was going.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't expect to meet.
Is it anyone I know, Fred?
Oh, I hardly think so, Harry. Our guest tonight is bent on putting you and me out of business.
You're not interviewing the sponsor, Fred.
No. Not quite yet, Harry. This gentleman... unless he's here in another suit. This gentleman I have in mind is going to put us out of business the hard way. He is a part of that great new industry, to wit, television. And the minute people can see what they've been hearing, Harry, that is the end of us.
Yeah. Say, maybe you ought to get your face lifted for television, huh, Fred?
No, I think I'll get my face lowered, Harry.
Lowered.
If people can only see my hair on their television set, you know, like that. If they can only see my hair, they'll think I'm a little boy. And they'll keep tuning in, waiting for me to grow up so they can get a good look at me.
On another evening, Fred remarked,
I have been in vaudeville, I have been in the theater, I have been in motion pictures, and I have been in radio. Currently, I am in trouble. Trouble spelled sideways is television. Television has not only changed the lives of the performers, but the lives of many innocent people. I heard of a sad case where, after a couple got married on the bride and groom television program, they learned that their marriage will not be legal in 12 states for 6 weeks until the kinescope is shown there.
Fred made several attempts at television, but the technical equipment and the people bothered him and cramped his spontaneity. The role of the TV guest, a sort of elder statesman of the ether, hadn't been invented in 1950 when he finally stopped broadcasting, and it was one that might have suited him perfectly. That same year, 1950, NBC charged actress Tallulah Bankhead with the last stand of entertainment radio, The Big Show, an hour and a half of all-star entertainment. It was a great evening when Fred Allen joined her.
NBC has tried me on radio, and they've tried me on television. Now, while they're waiting for a new medium to come along, they're trying me on this special assignment with my clarinet, sort of freelancing.
I see, darling. Now, what special assignment?
Well, first, the announcer, Ed Hurley, he has to ad-lib something, and then I'm supposed to play... First chimes, the first time you ever had a half a tone chimes in the history. And then I am supposed to say, this is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Fred, my darling.
Oh.
You fool.
Oh, yeah.
It's so nice to have you back on radio. I've missed you.
Oh, so you are the one. According to Hooper, you are the one.
No, darling, we've all missed you. Why don't you come back, Fred?
Well, I'll tell you, darling. I have been dabbling in something which, for the want of a better name, we shall call television.
Please, darling, people are eating.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say, you didn't by any chance happen to see me on my first television show, did you?
No, I didn't, Fred.
You weren't home?
Oh, yes, I was home, darling.
Oh, no set, darling?
No guts, darling.
Well, you know, television's a new medium, and I have discovered why they call it a medium. Because nothing is well done, or very little.
Oh, darling, I think you're so funny.
So you are the one.
no, Fred. No, seriously speaking, darling.
Well, as if we haven't been. What else?
Well, no. Why did you leave radio?
Well, I'll tell you, Tallulah. They wanted me to do one of those programs where you call up people on the telephone and ask them questions and give them prizes, you see. And that's why I quit and went into television.
Do you mean?
Yes, it was a choice between the medium and the telephone.
Wait for laugh. Oh, excuse me.
No, don't. Don't read the stuff in parentheses. You skip that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fred. I'm sorry. Well, anyway, I'm glad I was able to get you back on radio, even if it is only as a guest.
Uh-huh. Well, in radio, Fred has been a four-letter word for some time.
In the 1950s, Fred took the time to publish his famous letters and his memoirs and life story, Treadmill to Oblivion. He did guest shots, wrote, worried a lot. In 1949, he volunteered some thoughts about humor. It was spleen, but, as always, brilliantly phrased.
While so-called radio humor flows unceasingly, it has lost all spontaneity. The king of the airwaves, the comedian, is rarely more than a mouthpiece for his writers. Now, witness one Jack Benny, who once confronted me with, "You wouldn't talk to me like that if I had my gag writers here." Radio humor has become a serious mass-produced enterprise, demanding material to fill 18 hours a day, and in the process, leaving its exhausted perpetrators, writers and actors both, mark you, with naught but blank expressions and trembling hands. Now, all humor, in my opinion, should be created and disseminated in an atmosphere of relaxation. There should be time to think humor, time to tell humor, and to enjoy humor. Maybe with men working fewer hours in the day and finding more leisure, the quality of our humor will improve. But I have my doubts. And certainly radio works against all of this.
Fred was asked, is humor really dying?
Well, where there's life, of course, there's always hope. But the present-day trend, to me, it seems to be in the wrong direction. Now, look, I never thought that I would live to see the day when I'd have to compete with a washing machine and $300,000. Iceboxes are replacing actors and musicians. The idea is, of course, if you can't entertain people, give them something. Now, if that isn't a sorry commentary on contemporary entertainment, then I don't know a sorry commentary when I see one. And I have seen some sorry commentaries. I'm an authority on sorry commentaries, as a matter of fact. Well, television, I'm afraid, is going to make it worse. In the beginning, television drove people out of the saloons into their homes. But now people have sets in their homes. Television is driving them out of their homes back into the saloons. But who can tell? We can take hope from the fact that regardless of what radio and television are doing to it, humor will never die. Laughter is the privilege of the free, the solace of the oppressed. Maybe if we can find a common bond in humor to stop the fussing, fighting, and feuding in the world, we might actually laugh our way into peace. In the final analysis, laughter is the universal language of mankind, and a little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men.